Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening this week. I'm Jared Serbu. On the program this time, we look at DOD's small business program. Last month, the Small Business Administration announced that for the second year in a row, the federal government met its small business contracting goals. That's after having missed the mark for seven straight years in a row. A lot of agencies have accomplishments to brag about when it comes to finally meeting that goal, but the Defense Department is responsible for about two-thirds of all the federal contracting funds that go to small businesses. DOD has made a lot of improvements in and of itself, and it took several years of work. To talk about some of that ongoing work, we have two guests this week. Andre Gudger did a lot of the heavy lifting over the past 4 years as the director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs. He's since been promoted to the job of Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial Base Policy. We're also joined by Kenyatta Wesley, the current DOD Small Business Chief. Andre Gudger starts off our conversation.
When you look at historical small business achievement across the federal government, it's always been all hands on deck mentality to do a host of things in order to meet the statutory required goal of now 23%. And coming into this job, looking at how the Department of Defense can contribute to the overall achievement of the federal-wide goal, we thought and we knew immediately there was not one thing we could do to change and turn the big ship, but there would be a host of things we needed to do. And one of the low-hanging fruit was really building accountability into the system, making the workforce accountable for achieving a goal that we all are marching to. And I've noticed that the department is very resilient when leadership is engaged to accomplish a department-wide goal. And so with the support from the top down, we built accountability in. We expanded the senior executive evaluation criteria and annual performance. That was very, very helpful. We looked at all of our acquisition policy as we were updating them early on in the administration to figure out what could we do to further enhance small business opportunity and, quite frankly, bake small business into the framework of what the department do. We know they're job creators, we know they're innovators, and we wanted to bring more of that into the department. So we looked at weighted guidelines, our source selection evaluation criteria. For the first time, we included small business as a factor, and all things being equal, small business factors mattered. And so there was a host of things like that. And I think the largest win for small businesses in history, in my opinion, was the accelerated payments. You know, being paid faster than the terms negotiated in your contract without you having to do anything, and it was solved with technology. That showed that smart government could work. And so, quite frankly, that was recognized by Harvard as a bright idea in government policy. And so I think those things kind of led to the overall beginning of cementing the achievement of the goal. When Frank Kendall first took over as the Undersecretary of Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics, he went after, you know, trying to figure out, do the things that we put in policy, how do they affect the outcomes? And what we realized is that every decision we make takes about 4 or 5 years to show up in the system. And this is a good result of things we started back in 2011 when I took the job that showed up in 2015 and 2016 soon to see. And I think that it helped the department achieve. And, you know, we couldn't do this job without the senior acquisition executives' involvement, with the base commanders being involved. And quite frankly, some of the hardest working people in the department are the small business professionals who really act as big advocates for industry, but also advocates within the acquisition framework to make good, smart, affordable decisions in choosing companies that they have, you know, enormous amount of market research to support why they make the decisions they make.
Secretary Kendall talked about this a little bit in the press briefing, but take us through a little bit why it's an objective of the department to make awards to small business. I mean, it's not just an affirmative action program sort of to direct small business dollars because, you know, we want to see them do well. What are the department's sort of selfish motivations for why it's good?
This is Kenyatta. So we sit down and we actually have a real conversation on what does small businesses actually bring to the table. And one of the things that Andre didn't hit on and give himself credit for, which he should, is the fact that he helped shape the mindset that we are in now. Meaning, you know, this impact that you see on goals right now is because he actually took the focus off the goal. If you take the focus off of something and actually drive the direction on what they actually do well, so meaning a small business that has typically done well for engineering services, CETA support, actual sitting down and actually understanding what technologies they bring to the table, what the cost drivers are for small businesses, which is a unique perspective he brought to the table coming from industry, and then having a great communication strategy. I think when you sit down and look at it, one of the largest drivers of how we got where we are is his communication strategy. He didn't sit here in the Pentagon for his first year or 2 years. He got out and he talked to all the commanders. He got out and he came and talked to myself when I was actually in the field as a small business director, and actually laid out his plan on where we were going to go. By driving the impact and specifically saying, you know what, small businesses can take, it aren't just service providers, they're also technology providers. They also drive innovation. So when you sit down and you say, what are some of the things that small businesses actually do? They help shape the direction of where the department's going by delivering technology to us, by actually improving technology that we've already had, but maybe we didn't see the next generation. They saw it because they had the investment strategy. They found the loophole in a theory that everyone disproved years ago, but someone found a way to prove that it can work. And they brought a reasonable price solution to the department. It became economically savvy. All right. So utilizing small businesses in a manner in which is efficient yet effective is a very selfish reason for the department to use it. I would tell you it's not an affirmative action program at all. It's not a socioeconomic program at all. It's actually a beneficial program to the department. And I think when we usually actually sit down and speak of it in terms of which it actually is and what was the intent of the Small Business Act, the intent of the Small Business Act was not necessarily to take care of one entity. It was to drive change and economic growth. And when we actually sit there and look at it, that's what the department's doing. That's why we're so effective now. By utilizing small businesses more than we ever have done in our history, we've become more efficient and more effective.
Hmm. And I know that in a lot of cases, and maybe overall, using small businesses can get you better deals. But are the other factors behind it, the other benefits they bring, do they outweigh price in certain cases? Are we willing to pay higher prices to get the additional benefits that come along with small business utilization?
I would say you'll probably be doing that on both sides, whether it's large or small. All right? I don't think that's a size determination. If a company in general brings you a better value, all right, and better value is not always a cheaper price. Sometimes it's have a better technology, more efficient, a faster technology. It's a faster way of doing business, a faster service, taking out bureaucracy in a process. If someone can actually do that, but you're going to pay a little bit more and actually save money up front to save money in the long term, I don't care whether you're small or large. That's an idea we need to consider.
Do you want to add to that?
I would like to. So I think about my time coming in from industry into the government. I'm the first director in history to come from industry into government. Mm. And I think that helped out a lot. And to go to the point that you're at now, I brought more of an industrious approach into the department, and I didn't look at it from simply a public policy view. I looked at, hey, are we really making full trades across the board, not just by way of contract, but full trades to put the department in the best place possible? And we took that into consideration as we built out what the framework and what the future would look like. And I must say that, you know, it has shifted the conversation from, you know, small business professionals being compliance experts and only doing surveillance to, hey, they're part of the fabric of what we do, and it's not disturbing in nature of the department. And quite frankly, there are benefits that we receive from contracting with small and quite frankly, in some mid-tier companies, and that we need to bring those non-traditional suppliers into our supply base because it's healthy. And it helps us modernize much faster than we had in the previous decades. And so I think the shift to the conversation to the department's achieving this goal wasn't solely about money. I mean, we know that low cost gets us in bad places in some cases. So it was always about that full trade and bringing accountability into the system.
Can you say a little bit more about that communication strategy that Kenyatta mentioned? When you went out and visited those local commands, what was your message to them? What did you tell them?
Well, you know, Kenyatta's right. I made I wanted a canvas approach. I wanted to get out and I wanted to talk to as many people as possible because I thought, as the old saying, you know, I want to hear the best idea. I didn't come in thinking I had every problem or answer to every issue that we faced. I thought the only way to understand what was going on is to talk to people performing the duties and responsible for those duties, which are the commanders in the field. But more importantly, I think industry in the field, people west of the Mississippi who see problems differently than the small companies on the East Coast. And so the communication strategy, I think in my first year, I did about over 50 outreach events and trips. And that included some local, a lot of local travel. But I went across the country on both coasts, north and south. And I thought that was number one. And so my message when I met with the senior acquisition executives or the head of contracting activity at any particular installation, it was always letting them know that we're here, we're a resource, and that we will develop a plan that would be unique for them, that will help them solve their unique problem and not a peanut butter spread of we have one-stop shop that can solve everybody's issue. It was, and they were very grateful and thankful that, you know, somebody in that was a director of small business for DOD actually reached out to them and followed up and, quite frankly, listened to them and did something about it. That simple.
You'll find that that's massive across the board. You know, one of the things that he did and that he charged me to do when him and Mr. Kendall put me in the acting role was to continue the communication strategy of making sure people knew we're here to help solve problems, not bottleneck anything, not slow the process down, but in some ways actually speed it up. Mm-hmm. You know, letting them understand that how you can do a sole source to an 8A company or how you can properly do a streamlined competition to service disabled veterans in order to meet technology needs and focus and maintain or in some case speed up timelines to get things awarded quicker. So I think you can't emphasize enough the fact that people needed to understand that we can actually be a help to them, not necessarily something that slows down things.
Yeah, and Kenyatta, so when you look at the results of what Kenyatta just said, that comes with one thing that Farouk rode side saddle with me, and that was reducing all the red tape and the barriers. I mean, our goal was to reduce all of the cumbersome policy over years and make it easier, write things in plain English and so that everyone could understand what the goal and what the mission was. And that's exactly what we did. We came out with policy. It was a host of policy that we implemented after that. And some of that new policy removed a lot of old policy. So we took, you know, hundreds down to a lot less than that. And we just executed to, you know, fewer things, but it made sense. And they were achievable and they were reachable. And Kenyatta was exactly right. It was beyond goals. The message was beyond goals. This is not about a goal. And it proved to be something that was been very fruitful for the department. I think the department sees a more healthier industrial base kind of coming together over the last few years.
I think when you really look at it, you know, what once one of the things the Small Business Act wanted, it was a healthy industrial base. And it was a healthy small business industrial base to be included in that overall industrial base, right? And so by actually having a acquisition approach that focuses on technology, innovation, efficiencies, those are things that cater to small business. By sitting down and saying, I want to drive change and improvement, those are things that small businesses thrive under. And I think when Andre came on board, he when he sat down and had a conversation with all of the small business directors and associate directors in the field, he didn't drive it on us. You know, he literally sat down and had a conversation with all of us and said, what do you see? You know, what are the challenges you see? Mm-hmm. And at that time, I was a GS-14, didn't know him from a hill of beans. And him, Dick Jimmin, Shay Assad, came over and had a real conversation with a young kid that just was trying to figure out how you can make something better, how you can make things move faster and have an actual genuine impact. And actually sit down and have them actually listen. Didn't just impact me. It impacted every small business professional that's sitting out there now. You can literally walk in any small business professional's office, mention his name, you'll see a different reaction than you've ever seen from any of the other ones before. And that's a positive thing because he listened, he had conversations. And those conversations then came back into action items. It wasn't just talk. And I think that's one of the things you have to drive home is it's not just about the talking. It's about driving the action of the communication you actually had. And he followed through, and I think that's something you have to remember. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to keep going now.
That's Kenyatta Wesley, the director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs. Andre Gudger, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy, is also with us. We'll come back and talk more about how the department met its small business contracting goals 2 years in a row after a quick break. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. Talking this week about DOD's small business contracting goals and the fact that the department has now met them 2 years in a row. With us for this are Kenyatta Wesley, the director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs, and his immediate predecessor in that job, Andre Gudger, who's now the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy.
Kenyatta, when you say that your office, you want it to be seen as a resource for the field, you mentioned a couple examples of that, but can you take us through some of the key things that you provide and that you're available to do for folks?
Yeah, so one of the things we actually do, I actually just participated in what we call a peer review process. Mm-hmm. And in the pre-award peer review process, this is the meeting that we have senior executives go out and we actually give guidance and advice to contracting officers, program management teams in the field before any major acquisition. And that what we did just recently is a large acquisition down in Florida. I won't go into all the details on that. I'll just say that actually we were actually sat down, broke down the solicitation, gave them true information on how they could actually implement small business more efficiently and get to maximize their value of utilizing small businesses. So, for example, when we went through the process, what we found out is that there was opportunities for success in the award fee plan. All right, a major contracting type is contracting cost plus award fee contracting, and you set up an actual award fee plan, and that award fee plan gives you credit and points towards achieving certain criteria, metrics, or goals. Well, as a part of that, what we realized is they could actually incentivize use of small businesses through subcontracting by actually including subcontracting as a part of the award fee plan. And it didn't have to be this bureaucratic process that was going to slow down their award fee board, that was going to actually drive up costs. It was actually going to be something to actually help them monitor their costs better, that make sure that they were paying their small business suppliers on time or early, and maximize and get their small businesses to actually cooperate more in the actual creativity process. Because one of the things that they were driving at was they wanted to gain efficiencies and improvements in their line and going forward. Well, we all know small businesses drive that innovation. So since they are, we wanted to have them utilize those subcontractors to actually push that. So by adding more points and a little bit more weight into the subcontracting plan, on the award fee plan, it actually now incentivizes them to utilize more small businesses to drive the result they're going for. It wasn't about my agenda. It was about what they sat down with me to say, I want to get from point A to point B. And then we help shape and cater a plan, tailor it to them to get where they want to go. And by the time we left that plan, and Lydia could tell you because she was sitting in that room, when we first walked in, they literally said we had no idea what to expect. They had never had a peer review with a small business person from the OSD. And so when they left out, the entire monotone was different. It was, you know, we should have done this 6 months ago. We should have talked to you a year ago. And now they're lining up with their next three acquisitions to actually talk to you. And I think that's a testament to say they found value in what you're going after. They found value in what you brought to the table. And they actually believe that the results are achievable. And I think that's really what we're looking at. Contracting officers, performance teams, program management teams that believe that the results are actually achievable because now they'll drive towards them. All right. And by building those relationships and sitting down and actually taking a tour of a factory, we had sat down with the F-35 team and had a conversation with them on a separate item. And they actually walked me through their factory, introduced me to all of their suppliers on the F-35. And we literally went through and talked about how they could maximize small business usage and actually reshape their acquisition and buying plan so they can actually cut out some of the middleman and reduce their pricing and structure and overhead. They implemented that plan, and they've actually saved quite a bit of money over the last 7 months. And to me, that drives to the point of what Andre was saying. If you get out, talk to people, actually put your eyes on what their actual challenges and problems are and tailor an initiative for them, you get results. And so those are just a couple of examples. I can tell you the peer review process is one. Actually getting out and walking a factory tour on a major weapons system and actually seeing what their suppliers are doing, what small businesses are actually performing, finding out if there are any hiccups, and then correcting those items and coming up with a tailored plan. And then you start to see and shape the results.
Sorry, go ahead, Andre.
Yeah, so this is a good example of another host of things that happened in 2011. Prior to then, small business professionals did not sit on peer reviews and acquisition strategies. That's new from 2011. It was part of the 8 actionable items, and I already listed like 4 of them, and so these are additional 2 that went into good, I would say, good public policy that kind of yield the results that you saw in last week's scorecard release. But I would also take it one step further. There was something that we did back in that same year that I thought made a monumental difference across the department. In fact, we shared it as a best practice at the interagency task force meeting with the other small business professionals. And then we trained 17 other agencies, and that was bringing big data analytics into the department. We created something called MaxPrac, which is a tool that analyzes and uses publicly available data in the FPDS and takes this mountain of data, because there's a lot of information in there, and we make it meaningful. And what we started to do was share this information that went into FPDS and look for areas of opportunity for our acquisition professionals to include small businesses within their current acquisition strategies. And it proved to be very, very fruitful for us. It gave us areas to go look where we could actually make improvements. Before then, there was no data analytics to show where we should look, or was it possible to make increases. Maybe we were maxed out at 20 or 19%. No one knew that answer. But that was something that we brought in department, kind of bringing what we do as an industry best practice into what we do in Department of Defense. And I think that not only helped Department of Defense achieve higher results, make a high number higher, I think it also helped other federal agencies achieve higher numbers as well.
So, what did that data tell you? I mean, did it just show you big gaps in areas where you had a lot of room for improvement and whatever, a certain NAICS code or something? Or what did it show you?
Well, when you look at what's in the regulation, we're supposed to provide maximum practicable opportunity for small businesses in our procurements. And no one knows how to measure that or what does that mean. And so not only would it show us by NAICS code or product service code where the opportunities were, it showed us where we had a very healthy industrial base and we could do more because it was healthy. And it also showed us where we had areas that was not a maximum practical opportunity for small companies. And although it was a small number and the view is that you could do more, there was no real opportunity for a small company to prime a, next generation air fighter, And so we were able to kind of segment and go after target areas. And that's the reason why we really focused on 3 areas, which was knowledge-based services, electronic and communications, and facilities maintenance. And because we saw that we had a very healthy industrial base, and those were high numbers. But if we can improve them all by a combined 10%, then we could achieve this, our department-wide goal. And Frank Kendall signed out a memo to the SAEs and members of the joint staff saying, hey, we're going to focus on these 3 portfolios, and I want everybody to increase by combined 10% off of a 2010 baseline, because it was 2011. And that proved to be one of the things that led to the positive outcome. And then we also looked at what else was meaningful that we could tangibly go after, and we looked at what was in a simple acquisition threshold window. And we went after things that were, like, simple and meaningful. I call it the Bill Belichick style of coaching. He always – his team gave him and other coaches learned from him, gave him credit because they said, hey, in prior with prior coaches, they would have 15 things on the board that the team would need to do to be successful to beat their opponent. But Bill Belichick thought it was cumbersome, and he simplified it, and he only gave his team three or four things to go do to beat the opponent. And that's why they've been able to build a dynasty. He gets a lot of credit for that. And when you look at our NCAA champions last year, they wrote one thing on the board. They put the number 15. That's what they needed to do in order to win the NCAA championship. And they weren't supposed to beat the number one team, which was Kentucky, and they did. So I would say that we took an approach that you would see happen in industry, happen in the world of academia. We brought that into the department, simplified what that would be, and went after those things. And it made sense, and they were actually obtainable, and they were measurable, and people understood them. And so it's led to what I think is a trajectory of continued excellent performance.
That's Andre Gudger, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy, formerly the Director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs. Kenyatta Wesley is also with us this week. He's the current DOD Small Business Chief. They'll both be back with us after another quick break as we talk about DOD meeting its small business goals 2 years in a row. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbia. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DOD. I'm Jared Serbu. Talking this week about DOD's small business program and the fact that the department has now met its small business goals for 2 years in a row, also helping push the broader government over the top and meeting its goals. Our guests are Andre Gudger, who spent the past several years as DOD's Director for Small Business Programs. He's now the Assistant Secretary for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy, and Kenyatta Wesley, the current Director for Small Business at DOD.
I want to go back to those three focus areas that you mentioned, because I just want to be clear. I'm guessing that you don't want to grow your small business numbers exclusively by focusing on, you know, small areas like that, not small areas, but areas like that where you already know that you have a healthy small business base. You probably want to grow the base in other areas that aren't so healthy
yet. That's great. Certainly.
So talk about how you do that and to what extent you're already working on that.
So one of the things we do, Andre talked about the fact that he started the Max Prac tool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, as a part of Better Buying Power 3.0, we're taking Max Prac and we're expanding its usage and growing it. All right. One of the things that we're trying to do is take the data and the analytics that are in that tool, and we're going to tie it into other pieces of information to help shape and help the department make better and more informed decisions. Okay. So, for example, one of the ideas, I don't even know if I told him this piece yet, but, you know, it's one of the things he shouldn't have left me in charge.
He'll find out now.
So when you sit down and you go and you say, I want to take information from the stock market. I want to take information from sources where rare metals are that may be in a aircraft or a ship. And we know that rare metal in Africa or mined in another country has been held off and stopped. I want to know when that happens, what the potential impact is going to be on a program in the department. And I want to know when it happens so that way before it hits us, we can have a plan on how we're going to keep our productivity going. I want to be able to actually take that information and put it to use in a forward-reaching environment so that way every commander will always know ahead of time. That way we're not chasing it. You know, if you're reaching out for it early, you can now make better and informed decisions. You can now maybe stockpile pieces because you saw this coming. We want to be able to take companies that may have been going under mergers and acquisitions. What are going to be the impact on our industrial base? I want to be able to sit down with his new organization and say, from a small business perspective, if this merger happens, this is what's going to happen to competition. If this happens to competition, it drives my costs up potentially and also maybe drives my innovation down. And the potential options for results. Because of what people don't always realize is when you sit down in a source selection as a person who's done hundreds of these, when you sit down and you sit down in a source selection as a part of a source selection team, and you genuinely have the same 3 to 4 companies always bidding, you tend to get the same solution. Well, in order to drive true innovation, you need to have fresh companies. Well, you need to take that data from Max Prac and actually have it encompass more data and have it be able to analyze and sort out what the impacts of potential items or changes in the industrial base, no matter where they are in the world, how the price of fuel in another country will impact our usage here. You know, something as small that people don't realize, fuel, gasoline, and oil, and bitumen, which we use for paving roads and actually paving streets and repairing, building roads in Afghanistan, Kuwait, Iraq. That price, that if fuel price goes up too far, it affects how much bitumen we can buy, you know, which also impacts how much paving we do in the U.S. And so I want to be able to eventually get to where that strategy, we can track it, we can plan for it, and we can adjust to it ahead of time. And that way we always get to where we are getting more innovative solutions, we're controlling costs better, and we're actually sitting down and thinking ahead versus having to react. That's our goal.
So your responses to that kind of data, so, I mean, to take, for example, your example of rare earth metals, I can understand how you would respond to that by stockpiling, but your other example of not wanting two companies to potentially merge because it would reduce competition, what sorts of tools does the department have to intervene in a case like
There's
that?
Open door.
I mean, that's really more in your wheelhouse, Andre.
Yeah, it is. I'm responsible for a lot of those things now. There's a host of antitrust laws. We have Hart-Scott-Rodino that look at most of domestic M&A activity, where we look at competition as a factor. That's the main tool we have. If it's foreign investment in the United States, there's a process for that, and the CFIUS process for that we use to monitor foreign investment as well. And so we take a healthy look at that continuously, as you already know. We inform the Undersecretary and our compadres at Department of Justice on the potential impacts, and we work closely with the services, DLA, DCMA. So those are the main tools. Those are the things that are in the law that we use. And Kenyatta is exactly right. He and we together are expanding what we do by using as many open data feeds that are publicly available to us. We're going to use technology to continue to solve the problem because there's more and more activity in M&A in the M&A world. It's happening globally. It's happening faster. And so the way we get in front of that is to use predictive analytics and adaptive learning tools that are publicly available to us. We're looking at bringing those in the department to help solve and help solve our problem and help us become more proactive. I mean, I think the theme that you've heard today is that we've taken small business from being very reactive and downstream to moving it further upstream, working closer with program managers, working closer with our antitrust laws and other things like that to be very proactive so we make good decisions so the department has what it needs 10 years or 20 years from now so that we can continue to dominate.
I think one of the things we can say is, you know, and I think Andre will second this, from my perspective, I came into senior executive service at the time when I had a solid foundation of leadership here to bounce ideas off of. Having Andre around, having at that time we had Dick Jenman around, then you have Mr. Kendall and Alan Estevez here. We have a leadership group that gets it, all right? So they're not sitting there where we have to explain hours upon hours upon hours of useless information. We can sit down, have a genuine, core, detailed conversation, 15 to 20 minutes, and it'd be meaningful and actually be able to come out of there with a working plan and then with permission to go out and drive change. And I think one of the things that he talks about on a regular basis, even in his new role, is how do you get ahead of something? You know, Mr. Kendall says it all the time to us. He doesn't want bureaucracy. He wants us to cut out the bureaucracy. He wants to bring in non-traditional suppliers. The small business program does that. That is what it's engineered to do, is to cut out the red tape, bring in non-traditional suppliers. And it's also removing barriers, not just to commercialization like you see in Better Buying Power, but in doing overall business with the department. That's what small business, the entire small business team, whether it be here at OSD, whether it be at the Army or the services level, whether it be at the subservices level and components out in the field, their entire job is to remove those barriers, make it more efficient to get small businesses into the door and their ideas into the department.
Kenyatta Wesley is the director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs, our guest this week, along with Andre Gudger, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial Base Policy. They'll both be back with us for one more segment after our last break. This is On DOD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serdeo.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. One more segment this week with Kenyatta Wesley, the director of DoD's Office of Small Business Programs, and his immediate predecessor in that job, Andre Gudger, who is now the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial Base Policy. We're talking about the recent announcement that DoD has met its small business contracting goals for the second year running and what the department changed to make that happen.
In terms of meeting your goals in successive years after this, the changes that you've made up until now obviously required high-level leadership attention to get you to where you are. That leadership's going to change at some point. Are all the changes that you've made so far, I mean, do they build you the momentum that you need to keep this going, the legal change, the changes, the regulatory changes, or could this all fall apart if we get a new set of leaders in a couple years from now?
As a historian, what I'll tell you is this. I don't see that happening. Typically, no one wants to go backwards into failure. You bring a bunch, I use this competition strategy in the field several locations. When you take over an organization and they aren't meeting a goal or an initiative of the department, and all of a sudden you start putting a competition board up, you tell the world, this person's doing great. That's what the scorecard is. Tells the world who's doing great, who's not doing great. They start to build success. When the next commander comes in after 3 or 4 years of meeting a goal, 2 years of meeting a goal, that next commander does not want to be the one that breaks the streak. So I don't see that happening. I don't think you have to worry about that happening. Is it sustainable? Yes. But I'll be the first to tell you there are some challenges going to come up. You know, there's new policy that implements overseas contracting into the department. And I'm very open and honest about that. And does it means that we now have to have a environment that we now have to train and build that culture in that environment. Because doing business overseas is drastically different than doing business in the United States. And having small businesses be armed with information on how to handle that environment properly, how to get in and out of host nation properly, that's going to take some time. So do I think that we're going to take a small dip potentially? It's possible, but not to the manner in which it will derail our success. I think that over time, we're going to build, because that's what the department does. The department adjusts to the climate. We have commanders, and the one thing I can say about the promotion process of our commanders is it builds leaders, and it builds leaders that are proactive and that adjust to their surroundings, and that's how we win wars. Well, it doesn't just translate to the battlefield. It's also translating how we run the department. And so the leadership will adjust and it will continue to thrive. I don't think that we will go backwards too far. And if we do, it won't be for long.
I'm glad you brought up the overseas contracting issue, because that's one issue, one reason anyway, that at least according to my numbers, only 81% of your total spend is actually counted in the overall small business baseline. Once that comes in, once that is added back into the baseline, how much does that change? I don't know if you know what the total dollar figure is, or
I don't know the dollar figure, but I do know we've run the numbers on percentage impact, and it's about a 2.3% increase on our baseline, and that was based on our 2013 numbers, and so that's why I say I anticipate we're going to have a small dip. It's not going to plummet us, 20% or 15%, but it'll plummet us, take us down a couple of percentage points. But I do believe that it's something that we'll be able to handle and absorb, once we get people trained up overseas. Because contracting officers, program managers that have spent their entire career overseas, they don't know what FAR Part 19 really is, or the 13 CFR really is, and how to actually implement that, because they've never been exposed to it. So one of my jobs is to actually put together a training plan of how we're going to get overseas, and so starting in FY16, get over there, start training them, getting them up to speed on what these small business rules and regulations actually are. So, and how do they actually utilize them, and how are they beneficial? They need to see that it's beneficial. It's not just a burden that's going to be put on them. It's something that actually drives them, that will actually help them, and actually save them time, money, so they can do more. Because I think one of the things that everyone in the department is realizing right now is you can do more if you have more money. And since we know our budget isn't going up, what we have to do now is do more with what we have. And small business will help us do that.
And you talked earlier about the benefits of going out and doing these on-the-ground peer reviews. Are there enough of you guys to go around to actually go and talk to all the programs that you need to and take apart the acquisition strategies to drive change into these things?
That's a loaded question.
You're never going to get anyone in the government or in industry to admit that they have enough people to do any job. Okay, so when I was CEO of my company, I still never had enough people. But what you realize is always a team approach. And so this burden is not just solely carried by small business professionals. They're with our peers, whether it's logistics and material readiness, our contracting workforce, and some, quite frankly, some of the folks from my program elements have been extremely helpful in sitting in on peer reviews. When I was director of small business, I used to call the associate directors in the field all the time to participate in peer reviews. And quite frankly, I called Kenyatta to sit in one for me because we had so many going on at the OSD level. And so as long as there was no conflict, meaning that he was with the Army and he wasn't reviewing an Army acquisition or performing a peer review for the Army, then it was a healthy thing. And quite frankly, it yielded better results. It was a blessing in disguise to have people who actually understood the technology or the program sit in on the peer review. And so I think that we will continue an approach like that where we will be utilizing a staff across the field throughout the department to help, achieve whatever the goal may be or whatever the initiative may be.
I literally just left out of a session with the new DPAP director and Claire Grady, and one of the things we talked about was the peer review process and our initiatives for working together in the future as she's just coming on board, taking the reins after Mr. Jinman. So that team approach is going to continue, and we won't fall off.
Last thing, because we've only got a couple minutes left. Despite the success in the top-line numbers, you guys still fell short this year in women-owned small businesses and in HubZone, in the socioeconomic categories. What's the plan to turn that around? Not turn it around, but get past the goals next year?
Well, on a woman-owned small business, you're talking about we were 0.32% away?
I think that's right.
We'll get there. I'm not worried about that one. That's the one thing I can tell you, especially with the new woman-owned small business set-aside provision. So with that provision, it allows for us to now have set-asides and get to women companies a lot easier. The HubZone is a little bit different. It's a little bit more challenging. That's not something that we shy away from. With the rezoning of the HubZone lines a couple of years ago, the department, as well as the rest of the federal government, it's not just the department. The entire federal government has struggled with that particular goal. And then there's a requirement that 35% of the employees of each of these companies have to actually live in a hub zone. So that a lot of companies that maybe even reside in a hub zone, if they don't have 35% of their employees, they hire one employee too many that live outside of the hub zone, they no longer get credit as a hub zone anymore. So that goal tends to fluctuate. So that's a challenge there that we have to worry about. But I'll tell you, we've got some initiatives in place right now. Mr. Kendall himself is going to do a HubZone-focused small business event at the beginning of the FY. And then we're also some of the actual subordinate commands. I know CECOM just had a HubZone-focused event down at Aberdeen Proving Ground. The Air Force and the Navy folks are also doing a HubZone-focused event, trying to gear in and get those non-traditional HubZones into the department. So you're going to see a lot more initiatives driving towards HubZone to try to get that goal.
Andre, you wanted to add something?
Absolutely. Both of those categories are near and dear to my heart, and we see a constant improvement toward and an increase year over year for the last 4 years, achieving the women-owned goal. So the trend line, the regression line is positive. It's great. It's heading in the right direction. In HubZone, we actually met the goal 4 years ago. But what happens when you're successful? You get punished. So meeting that goal and making hub zones a part of our fabric and framework, they became decertified because they were successful. And then when the census came out that determines what's considered a hub zone in the country, a lot of zones were decertified because now there were more money flown into them. Now they're no longer historically underutilized. I would say that that's the success of the program because we met the goal, and then when the census happened, it showed that those same tracks no longer were in hub zones. So now you have to create more hub zone areas. Well, there's less hub zone areas in the country than there were, and we really have to wait till the next economic census, which is in a few years, 5 years from now, to determine what will be in the next census track of areas that we can target because it constantly moves. And so what you're looking at is it appears to be a bad number, but that's a very successful number.
Understood. All right, gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks so much for doing this. Congratulations on a couple good years here, and best of luck in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kenyatta Wesley is the director of DOD's Office of Small Business Programs, and Andre Gudger is the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy. They joined us this hour to talk about the fact that DOD has now met its small business contracting goals for 2 years in a row and what the department changed over the last several years to make that happen. If you missed any of our conversation, we will post the full program, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. You can also find all of our coverage of this year's small business scorecards across the federal government at federalnewsradio.com. That's going to do it for our program this week. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. I'm Jared Serbio. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.